Good morning. I'm having one of those days where clicking buttons is not working. Well, welcome to the Business and Bytes podcast. I'm one of your hosts, John Hansman.
I'm your other host, Emilio Mejia. Thank you guys for joining us today.
Yeah, super excited. Okay, so stick with us. We might nerd out a little bit, but I think the conversation is super valuable that we're going to have today. Here's what inspired this. Yesterday, I spent some time with family, and then I went home, and I do what I sometimes do because the world has changed, and we don't watch cable anymore. We watch YouTube. So I was scrolling through my YouTube feed, and I found a really good article from 60 Minutes. And if you go to my personal Facebook page and or you look at the show notes, we'll have the link to the article. But we've talked about this in a previous episode, the MGM Grand cyber attack, which as of today, the number is $100 million of loss. Yeah, exactly. That's a lot. It's one of those things that exponentially we're seeing just cyber attacks costing businesses more and more. So 60 Minutes did a complete episode talking about who were the people behind the MGM Grand attack. And I think it's important because it's a new group. And one of the things that we have found over the last year is that most of the ransomware groups have been foreign. They've been out of Russia, North Korea, and China. Those are kind of been the three big ones. There's other ones out of Africa and other places like that for sure. But those have been kind of the three big places that we've been seeing ransomware attacks until this one. This one was actually a group of Americans. And what they're thinking, this is what the FBI is saying, they are between 18 to 25, and they're teaming up with one of the leading Russian ransomware gangs. So now you got two ransomware gangs working together to try to steal a bunch of money. What's really scary about this is they're starting to attack IT infrastructure. And so when we look at the actual incident that happened, we find that the way that particular incident went down is they actually called the help desk and asked for a password reset. And that's actually what got them into the infrastructure. And I think one of the things that the 60 Minutes article highlighted, because they had video, like B-roll of the incident happening where you'd walk up and all the slot machines are down. But I don't think that was the most scary part of the whole incident. I think it was the fact that when you walk into a hotel, they had a lobby fully filled with angry, pissed off people.
So let's pause for a second and touch on both of those things. The first one, the social engineering aspect of how they got there, just for maybe anybody listening that isn't familiar with it. You want to start or you want me to start that?
Well, no, go ahead. I think that social engineering is a huge part of most cyber attacks in today's society. Think about every phishing attack that happens, which is one of the primary ways that cyber attacks happen. It's all social engineering.
Yeah, so agreed. So I believe in the MGM, it was kind of it's a help desk call scenario, right? Somebody calls the help desk and says, "Hey, I'm John. I can't get into my account. You know, reset my password." And the IT team or the security team didn't do a good enough job to verify, or didn't have a way to verify that user was who they're saying they were. So as soon as they gave that person access to the system, they were able to jump in there and wreak havoc. You know, it doesn't matter how many security tools you have in place. And I tell this to all my clients, my prospects, it doesn't matter how many security tools you have in place if the person is just going to open the front door and let them in.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when we start looking at this, the common social engineering has been just trying to trick people into giving away information. It generally hasn't been targeting the IT infrastructure, the IT department itself. which means that these big companies, especially when you think about an MGM grant, okay, you and I are smaller businesses. There's a really good chance that most of our clients know our technicians or know us, or and we know them because we're smaller. Our clients aren't like, you know, 1,000 people. But then when you look at these giant companies, there's no way for the IT department to know people by voice like you and I do with our clients.
Correct.
And even with that, we now look at AI voice recognition and that, all that stuff's changing as well.
It's definitely going to change the game.
It's definitely going to change the game, which means that we have to come up with a way, these big companies particularly have to come up with a way of how do you vet people when they call in? And I'm sure MGM has a whole new process because they'd have to after this. I think what's fascinating about this particular group that calls themselves the Scattered Spider is that they're Americans. Now, there's a good thing and a bad thing to the being Americans. Being Americans means they easily understand culture and how to talk to people, and there's less of a chance of maybe being discovered on a phone call because they have the ability to just talk. The advantage, and I think this is where this is better for the FBI in a sense, is that if they get caught and they're in the United States, it's a lot easier to bring them down once you start gaining evidence about where these people are and who they are. And they're going to be more easily prosecuted if they're in the United States, as opposed to if they're in some foreign country like Russia. Like if they're in Russia or North Korea, there's literally nothing you can do about it. You just have to deal with it. As opposed to if we can figure out who these people are, then if the FBI can figure out who these people are, they have a higher chance of stopping them.
No, definitely, definitely.
So now, I think the valuable thing is it's really a matter of keeping on guard all the time.
And the second thing you mentioned was, you know, if you walk into a hotel and you see all these angry people, I want clients to remember how much of a reputation hit you take when you are hacked. Even the bigger you are, the worse it is, right? One of my models is you're not too small to get hacked. You're just too small to make the news. But the bigger you are, you're definitely making the news. So let's say that I like to gamble, or I stay at a certain casino because I like to gamble. And now I walk into a casino and I see all these outraged, customers or members or guests, and they're mad because they have none of their money. Why? Because you were hacked, because you didn't properly, you know, have a good cybersecurity plan in place. Do I want to stay at that hotel anymore? Do I want to bring my money here to gamble? You know, not that I'm pushing gambling on anybody, just saying, you know, that's the topic we're speaking of. So I might as well mention it.
Well, and here's the thing about it. You know, I've told even a lot of my clients, there's no way for an IT company, IT department to 100% prevent a cybersecurity incident.
That's true.
So we can't throw rocks at MGM maybe for having this happen because of how it happened. But the reality is they're just another number. And I think what gets me and what really made me really think about this is just not the crowds and the reputation. I think that's important. That's a reason to be looking at your cybersecurity infrastructure and saying, well, I don't want to have bad reputation. But cybersecurity incidents have real-world consequences. You look at things that are happening today and take a scenario like a power company that doesn't do a good job of shielding itself from cybersecurity incidents. You know, like I was listening to another conversation, and most people don't realize how automated our power grid is. It used to be that to tune a power grid, you'd have guys with knobs and they would look at the numbers and they would kind of tweak things manually. And now this is all automated by computers. So if those computers go down or go haywire, you can have a major, large outage or meltdown of the system because of that. Here's a good example. And I don't believe this was cybersecurity related at this point, but I have a virtual assistant who's over in the Philippines. And they had a heat wave. That's one issue. But they had something like 21 power plants shut down over the whole country. And it created blackouts in a heat wave where people don't have air conditioning. They don't have internet. They don't have the basic things that they need to survive. Real consequences come from cybersecurity incidents. And it's not just money, and it's not just the, you know, the incident itself. It's like you literally have real people in a lobby, in the case of MGM, or real people being affected in a physical way. I think sometimes we disconnect cybersecurity incidents from like real life consequences. And we don't think about how this literally created a behavior of people being in a lobby stuck, or they ended up not being able to get money, or, you know, all these different things can happen.
The trickle down effect, right? Like you walk into the lobby, I'm irate. Now I start a conversation with you, and for some reason we get into a physical altercation, and some, you know, and that leads to something else. And, you know, things just keep trickling down. And yeah, you're not wrong.
Is that crazy? You just think about like this, the idea that sometimes I think we almost think about what happens in cyberspace stays in cyberspace, if you will. And that's simply not true today. It's really, when you have this level of an incident, it literally affected people couldn't get into their rooms to get their belongings because all the room locks were completely locked out. They couldn't get to key areas of the building because the access control was completely destroyed, you know, wiped out. And they were asking, so at this point, it cost them $100 million. They refused to pay the ransom, which was, they were asking for $40 million is what the ransomware gang was asking for. So basically, I believe the other group in town actually paid the ransom and got back up a little faster, and theirs was probably close to the same. $100 million just out, I mean, just completely gone. And so you take that to a smaller scale, like a small business, and it could be 400,000 or 200,000, depending on what your business is.
Crazy. Yeah.
It's just nuts. It's so crazy. So I think it's something to keep an eye on. I think that we really just have to be aware that the old days of, we used to joke around about ransomware. We used to joke around about emails, scam emails. Oh, well, you just got to look for poor English. And that's not the case anymore. The world has changed. Criminals have gotten a lot smarter, and they're starting to actually do things that are smart to cause these issues. And we really have to look at, like, keep an eye on it.
That's exactly where I was going. I said this, you know, the scenario of U.S. hackers joining with hackers from foreign countries. It's like, hey, let me tell you the tips and tricks that the U.S. personnel are using to identify, you know, when you guys try to infiltrate them. So pretty mm-hmm. much that, right? Yeah. Make your emails look like this. Make sure your spelling and your punctuation, make sure your grammar, you know, or run it through us. And then it's one less thing for you to have your guard up about, right? Like if you read it and you're like, all right, well, that's how I would have talked to one of my friends. Now you lower your guard a little bit. So every little thing makes you lower your guard just a little bit more, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. Yep.
And that's why cyber criminals don't act immediately when they get into an email system. That's why they wait a while, because they're looking at your mannerisms, your behavior, who you're sending emails out to. Yeah. You don't notice it. They've probably been in there for 90 days or more, and before they actually act, because they're socially engineering and socially learning about your business and who you are. So that's why it's important to have that stuff in place, which turns us and moves us over to our next segment. Cause it's, you know, we want to kind of go back to the basics on our cybersecurity segment. Again, this is a full cybersecurity conversation on Business and Bytes today. We're working on our next guest, but we want to keep some momentum and keep moving here. Let's talk a little bit, and you're going to use your handout as an example about some tips that we could be using in the real world to help prevent these types of attacks happening, especially when it comes to smaller business?
Yeah, so basically, how do we try to mitigate what we were just talking about, in other words? Yeah. Let's go ahead and jump into it right here. All right. So, you know, we call this our 15 ways to protect PDF. This is what I give away at shows. This is what I give away at marketing events, right? People are like, look, what do I just, you know, out of the box, you know, gun to the head, you just met me. How do I protect my business? I was like, all right, well, you start with these 15 things. And some you're going to be able to do, some you're not going to be able to do by yourself without the help of an IT professional. But it's at least a good checklist to start with. So we'll start with the first one. The first one is security assessments, right? You have to know where you're at. I've had this a couple times, and John, you tell me your experience here. I've had a person walk up to me at a show that I was at, and he's like, look, we were hacked last week. We just lost 40,000, you know, from our bank accounts, this and that. You know, we need help, ASAP, ASAP, ASAP. I get on the phone with them the very next day, first thing in the morning, and the first thing that I say is we need a cybersecurity assessment. And I tell them there's a cost involved, and then I never hear from them again. I'm like, so you just lost 40,000, and I'm telling you that you need to spend, you know, I'm just going to, I don't want to throw figures, but, you know, it's very, very low considering what you're getting. You know, let's just call it $1,000 ballpark. Some people can be higher, some people can be lower. And I tell you, your initial assessment needs to be $1,000. I can't start helping you unless I know who's in there. What if somebody's still in there? Right? How do I help you if somebody's in there right now?
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, we suggest that every business gets a risk assessment. But if you come to us and say, hey, I just had a cyber attack, we're going to double down on that because the risk assessment is really what helps us determine, is there still somebody in your email that's causing havoc?
Yeah. And what were they coming in there to take? You know, what else? What do I need to protect, right? Yeah, they got to your money, but what else is in there that they were after? And I need to protect that. And if you don't let me do a proper investigation of that, then, you know, I don't even know why we're having this conversation.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. A security assessment is really even the starting point. And then, you know, understanding, let's just be upfront. If you find something way worse, then you have to move on to even a mitigation step. Like if you start looking at ransomware, you start looking at something that requires a specific team, then it even changes from there, which is, it doesn't necessarily stop at the risk assessment. That the risk assessment doesn't necessarily solve the problem of the attack that you had. What it does is it gives us eyes on and gives us a starting place to figure out exactly what happened.
And maybe a roadmap on the next couple of things that one we're about to cover or things that your company should be doing once you're there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because it could be more than 15 ways. It's just these are the ones that we recommend to start with. It's kind of like the foundation of it.
Yeah.
All right. To number two, right? Spam email. Like you just mentioned a couple minutes ago, the number one way that people come in is through phishing attacks and social engineering of that form. So securing your emails, have a third-party anti-spam filter. And if it does even more than that, even better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and this might be another bullet point, but I think it even goes beyond that. So, you know, the next part that you'll see is securing with logon passwords, but are you actually monitoring your email system to ensure that you know if something odd is happening? So, for example, I mean, commonly for us, it's people on vacation in Mexico or something like that. Yeah. But we've seen where people logged in from outside a country in a suspicious country, and that has triggered us to do an investigation that in one case turned out to be somebody in their email. Now, because we were monitoring, the response time to that event was super low, super fast. Within an hour, like the event was cleaned up. But if you don't have a way of monitoring your SaaS, your software as a service products, you put yourself in a place where you may not know that there's somebody in your system for weeks or months. So, you know, just doing spam it's important, but there's more to protecting email than just the spam side.
I agree, and I think we might get into that a little bit later point. If not, we'll make sure that we make that a point.
Well, I just made it a point.
Oh yeah, for something without a little bit more advanced, but definitely the first time that I saw that, to be honest, I thought it was a game changer.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that's something that every business should have in their toolbox, let's call it.
Yeah.
All right. And then next, let's move on to passwords and security policies around passwords, right? Let's not just say passwords and throw it out there.
Yeah.
I think businesses need to aggressively take a look at their password security policy and be like, all right, does this fit, number one, with the cybersecurity culture that I've enabled at my workplace, right? Mm-hmm. So some people complain, well, I have to reset my password every 30 days. I have to reset my password every 60 days, 90 days. And I know that a lot of different IT companies have their own policy like to go with. I know Microsoft, stirred up some controversial a couple months ago or a year ago when they said, maybe you never have to reset. And I think it depends on a lot of things. I think primarily it depends on how tight is the rest of your security, right? If I have very good security and MFA and password managers, then maybe they don't have to reset it every 30 days. But if password is the only thing I'm using and I'm using the very basic passwords with no MFA, then maybe 30 days is needed, right? So I don't think there's a one rule of thumb on, this covers all. I think it depends on the rest of your security stack and what do you have to complement your password policy?
Right. Yeah. I think the reality is there needs to be one in place. You have to set that expectation ahead of time with your staff.
Agreed. And non-negotiable either.
No, yeah, 100%.
Nobody can bail out of it if they wanted to.
Exactly.
All right. So I guess before we move on to the next ones, I'll just give you some facts that are already on the PDF so we can just throw it in there. So 1 in 5 small businesses will suffer from a cybersecurity breach this year. Again, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. The other one is 81% of all breaches happen to small and medium-sized businesses, since we usually don't budget for those cybersecurity things. And that's what we're here trying to educate everybody on, that we should budget for those.
Right.
And 97% of breaches could have been prevented with today's technology. And that goes say with the couple tips and tricks that we're handing out here. Handing out dimes, as they would say. All right. So the next one, security awareness. You want to lead this one?
Yeah, I do, because this one I'm passionate about. Okay. There's statistically, I don't know the number, so I'm not going to quote the number, but statistically, doing security awareness training within your business can lower the attack surface or the attackability of a cybersecurity attacker significantly. I don't remember what the number was, but it was over 50%, over 60%. And just think about this. We talked about all these different things that happen with the MGM attack. Security awareness training, even within the IT department, would have prevented this attack. 80% of ransomware comes through email. Might even be higher. I think it was 90, it might have been 92%. All come through email, and they all come through socially engineered events. The only way to combat socially engineered events effectively is security awareness training, which means if you're not doing this, like, we give our yearly training away for free. Like, we actually, if somebody wants it, they can reach out to our to Truett, and we provide the annual cybersecurity training for free. You should be investing in cybersecurity awareness training, not just the year one, but I really fully believe that you should be looking at a weekly training rhythm that goes on with your staff. This is something that should also be in line with the passwords. There's no excuse not to get this done. Literally, you say, I don't have time. Well, you're actually putting your business at risk by that particular saying. So make time. Security awareness training is so important, and it would prevent 80%. Especially stuff that normally that can get through traditional antivirus, traditional tools would be stopped by security awareness training, because security awareness training is actually the thing that it would prevent an issue from even happening that would need the antivirus or the advanced security. So Like you're talking about literally the first line of defense with security awareness training.
I agree. I think, as you mentioned, passwords, security awareness, and MFA are the lowest cost, highest impact.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. I think that can help. So I'll touch on one more thing. Whenever I'm talking to people and kind of educating on this, I like to think of what we do as a three-step process, a three-layer process. And it's cybersecurity awareness training is the very, very foundation. The yep. second is the tools and security solutions that we put in place. And the third is recovery, right? The business continuity and disaster recovery incident response. And without that security awareness training, again, the other two don't matter, because it doesn't matter what I put in place. If you open the front door and let them in, then, you know, what are we doing? So I definitely think that security awareness, if you're not doing it, is one of those things that we need to do. And yeah. as John mentioned, not just one time a year. Like, it's great. And I'm not knocking that you're giving it away one time a year. I actually do that too. And, you know, it's what we can give. But if you're a business owner, decision maker out there, and you're listening to us right now, this needs to be more than one time a
100%. Year. 100%. One time a year is a starting place.
Correct.
And really, think about this. 30 minutes, 45 minutes tops for your annual. And then it's about 6 minutes a week that could save you $200,000.
Yeah.
Or $400,000, depending on your size of business. Yeah. Like, it's such an inexpensive time investment.
Yeah. An innocent plug. That's what my chapter is in my book, 15 Ways to Protect Yourself and Your Business from Hackers. If you hit me up in the comments, I'll send you a free copy. Yeah. All right. All right. So let's move on to our next one, advanced endpoint and protection. I'll go ahead and lead this one off. Yeah. So we're used to, I get this one so much. I don't know about you. Hey, I use AVG Free or Kaspersky. I use McAfee. I use Norton. Am I okay? I get this so many times. No, you are not okay anymore.
No.
That's like that used to be the basic level of security 10 years ago. We are way, way, way past that. Right now, you need to be using something advanced. I'll give you guys an example of something. And let's use ransomware as a primary example. When your system is infected with ransomware, the ransomware opens up thousands and hundreds of files within seconds, alters them, and then saves them again. A regular antivirus might not catch that. If you have an advanced endpoint detection and response, it notices, you know, it has AI in it, it has machine learning. It can say, wait, there's no way that a human user can open 1,000 files in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And edit them and save them. Something's going on. I have to lock this down. That's the response side, right? So we just talked about detection. It knows something's wrong. And then the response side is, I'm going to stop whatever process or whatever's making this happen right now.
Right.
Right. And then you should have a team, a security team that's going to get that report and it's going to jump in and help the tool now. Right. So the tool did what it needed to do by stopping it. Now the IT team or the security team has to come in and yeah. add to that.
Yeah. So one of the fascinating things, and this is one of the things that frustrates me to no end from an IT guy perspective, is you get the businesses who are banking on free antivirus. And I think that the thing to understand about all technology that's quote unquote free, it's not really free. It costs you. Think about Facebook today. Facebook today is full of ads and people that you actually don't know or care about, but they're pushing all this content towards you for the algorithm to get you to get hooked so they can show you more ads and things like that. Nothing that's free is really free. And here's a case in point. I posted this in the chat, but there's an article from the Federal Trade Commission. It says this, FTC said Avast is like one of the leading free antiviruses out there. I see it all the time. People love it for some reason, and it's like the worst. But FTC says Avast promised privacy, but pirated consumers' data for treasure. So like literally they were stealing browser information and selling.
Protect you is what's killing you at the end.
Literally. literally they were taking all the data that they harvested from the browser information, and they were actually selling it out for, you know, for money to actually use it for like advertising and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Some things to add. Yeah. I completely agree with you. I think those things are completely outdated. And like you said, if it's for free, you're the product, right? I think that's what I think that's the same.
And it's a gateway, like a free pro. I mean, let's be honest. Okay. I give away cybersecurity training for free. I give it away because I care about you, but I also give it away so we can start a conversation. Okay. Free antivirus is exactly the same thing. Quite literally, free antivirus is them giving you away a product so that you will buy the full version.
No, completely agree. That's
literally what it's for. It's literally so that you'll buy the full version. That goes with all of those things. You should not bank your business on a free software, or sometimes, depending on what it is, even their paid version is consumer grade. It's not going to protect your business from a big cyber attack on a network.
Completely agree. All right. What do we got next here? This one we've touched on multiple times on this show. MFA
all the time.
I'm sorry?
Can we talk about MFA all the time?
Yeah.
Turn on two-factor. I think we beat that dead horse.
Yeah. I'll mention it real quick so we don't have a gap in the episode. But yeah, turn on your multi-factor authentication, not only for your Office 365, for your Google Workspace or whatever you're using for your email, but also for your third-party applications. For some reason, people hear the word cloud and just assume that that they're absorbed of all security responsibilities.
Right.
Oh, my stuff is hosted in the cloud. And so it means that they no longer have to worry about their security because their stuff is hosted in the cloud. Yeah. I've heard this so many times. Oh, Salesforce takes care of our security, or these people take care of our security. No, you take care of your security. You know, you have to make sure that you have to make sure that they're doing it, but also, you're not absorbed the responsibility because your line of business application or whatever you're using is in the cloud. Exactly. Anything you have, you turn on 2FA.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. Everything.
And one of the things we learned about, I thought was fascinating about 2FA, I've moved, we're in 2FA is going to change rapidly. We're going to start moving towards biometrics and stuff like that soon, if not already. We're starting to make that our physical key is coming. But one of the big changes we've made, and I have very little on SMS anymore, we're recommending that you actually move away from SMS and go towards an actual authenticator app.
Yeah.
Even though Microsoft, they finally fixed it. Microsoft Authenticator is now requiring a number when you actually to authorize, like is because they had a bunch of issues with people who just hit accept and it let people in. But
I liked when it would just do my face scan and let me in, but I get it.
That's one of the things we're moving. I'm moving away. In fact, I don't have anything left on my SMS texting anymore.
Yeah. It's all I think SMS and email, if you can slowly move away from both of those, some things you can't, and it's just because that provider hasn't got around to making that a priority. But I think definitely, like you said, over the next coming months, over the next coming year, everything should start moving away from.
That's true. And most of them are moving towards a larger, better authentication tool for their websites. And that automatically adds those authentication tools, the newer ones that are not SMS only.
So, all right. So we have 15, but we're only going to cover 7 or 8 today. So I think this is going to lead us to our last one of the day, and it'll be computer updating and patching. Yeah. I had another conversation with a prospect last week, and she's telling me how she takes care of her own stuff. She's like, "Yeah, we do updates," and I'm like on your phone or on your computer, like vulnerability updates. And she's like, "Yeah, whenever it asks me, I just do it." And I'm like, "Are you doing critical? Are you doing definitions?" And of course, a blank stare. And I'm like, "See, so these are the conversations that you should be having with the IT professional that's helping you. Oh, nobody's helping me. It's just me." And I was like, "So you have an office with 5 people. you're on a public Wi-Fi shared and you want to do it on your own, I'm like, you know, we need to sit down and have a conversation.
Yeah.
It's actually one of my FTAs this week.
Oh, nice. Good,
but yeah. Yeah, you got to have the conversations. You got to keep your stuff up to date and patched. You know, if not being patched for 3 days can cause something, right? Because we have a lot of zero days that come out.
Understanding that, just patching Microsoft, even says this in here, just patching Microsoft, like, Windows is not a full patch. Anything that uses the internet, which is almost everything now, any software that uses the internet, touches the internet, has some kind of integration with the internet, every single one of those has to be patched. So those providers generally, my wife just sent me a text message. put out an update and, you know, to patch their software, but those generally don't get caught by the Windows updating tool. So those you have to, like Zoom is one that pops up with updates all the time. You have to make sure all those tools get updated.
Zoom, QuickBooks is one of those. Adobe sometimes, even though it has its own update application. But yeah, all your things need to be patched and up to date. Just like we say, okay, we got to patch your computer because something came out, a vulnerability maybe, or an exploit. The softwares that you use, the same thing happens. They figure out that there's, you know, a way to backdoor their software or to compromise it, they put out a patch or a bug. I mean, yeah. A patch to fix the bug. You know, and so you got to patch theirs just like you patch your stuff. So we definitely recommend being on top of your computer update and patching schedule.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, I think it's important. It has to be looked at. It's something that has to be managed, not just done once. I think that's the part that most people don't understand. That IT management is an ongoing process. If you have servers, auditing, like we're doing audits of all of our servers, policies, and all of those things, it's an ongoing thing that should be done on a regular basis.
I agree. Let's go ahead and close with that. I definitely agree, and I feel like most of the conversations I have, that's what it seems like, right? I've had the, hey, can you do this? Set it and forget it. And I'm like, I apologize, but I cannot do that.
Correct. Yeah, I get a lot of phone calls for servers. Like, oh, can you set up a server for me? I'm like, who's going to secure it and manage it for you? Oh, no, we just need to set up. Okay, it doesn't work that way.
And then one day something's going to happen, and then you're going to point the finger at AM3, or you're going to point the finger at Truett.
Yeah.
And, oh, they set it up for me and then I got hacked and they didn't do anything. And no, that's not the conversation we had.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why sometimes I turn down some one-off projects because, you know, who's going to continuously do this? Who's going to do that? Someone approached me and they asked me to, if you're in accounting, if you're in finance, if you're anywhere tied to the IRS, like an enrollment agent, you need a WISP, a written information security policy.
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of like the FTC safeguard rules. And somebody approached me and they're like, hey, can you just give me a price to set this up? Right. And I was like, but even in the policy, in the WISP, it says the ongoing checks and balances of security, the ongoing management of IT and security, who's doing the ongoing? And they're like, no, we just need a quote just to set it up. And then I was like, you know, then I don't think this is going to work out. You know, I appreciate the call, but you know, this policy says it needs ongoing. So for me to sign off and say, yeah, we integrated WISP here, a written information security policy, I can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So awesome, man. Good conversation.
All right. So yeah, so next episode, we will share the other 7 to 8 tips.
Yeah, I love it. I'm excited about it, and we might be here next week. I'm going to be traveling the week after, so we'll figure out our schedule, but we'll look forward to seeing you the next time we come online.
All right, yeah, we got some guests lined up. I know we have a CPA. I think I have a PR person lined up, so we'll get those scheduled in, and we'll let you guys know when those episodes are coming, so in case you have any questions or live comments for any of those, you know, we can go ahead and address those.
Yeah, I love it.
All right.
Okay. Well, we'll see you guys the next time. Thanks for watching.
All right. Thank you, guys.